It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yes, the program is live. Of course, if you're listening on a podcast, that really doesn't make much sense, does it? No. Let's put it this way. It is the 10th day of April, 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live on the interweb tubes. It is coming up on 2 minutes past the hour. I know, time check, but this has a purpose. And this program is live. I got up this morning in the suburbs of the D.C. area in a secure, undisclosed location. I had packed the car the evening before, and as quick as I possibly could, I hit the road because I wanted to make sure that I was home to the fabulous Horn Studios in the magnificent Kincaid Mansion in time to get on the air. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, freshly returned from, dear God, 11 days in Washington, D.C. I like D.C. well enough. It has a lot of its own charms. But it hath not the charm of home. It's like that moment in Henry V when Kenneth Branagh says, "To England and home." Yeah, there's just so, that word home is doing so much work in that sentence, and I understand every calorie of the work being done. So it's prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. I don't know if we're going to do the shtick. I admit, and you're probably sick of hearing me say, "Well, I'm worn out." Well, I'm still worn out. I'd say by Monday I should be back to my chipper self. I'll be back to my chipper self by tomorrow. What I'm really looking forward to, though, and I'm just listening to the program in my cans, what I'm really looking forward to is bringing the Rodecaster Pro online and just having it be the default broadcast device for the program. I think that will be fan-freaking-tastic. So that being the case, probably this weekend is going to be taken up with doing some studio reorganization and hopefully putting that in line. So, obviously, I've been gone for a long time, and I haven't done I haven't done nearly enough of the thank yous. I have a lot of that. The first 30 minutes of this program would probably be taken up in thank yous. So I'm just going to, let's see here. I'll hit as many of these as I possibly can for our subscribers, because that's what we do first part of every program. Come on now. So thanks to Judy, and thanks to Don, and thanks to Dan. Thanks to Charlene in Rogues Island. a charter member of the Sorority of Leans. Thank you to our buddy Khalil. Thank you to Kathleen and to Dwayne, to Tom, to Ron in the far, still frozen north. I think it's melting, though. They may be down to only having, like, you know, 2 or 3 feet of snow on the ground. Thanks to Marcia and Nancy. Thank you to Brendan, to Reed, to James, to our buddy Dr. Allen. Thanks to Alex. Thank you to Bob. And thank you to Don in West Tennistan. Thanks to Brock and Laurel, Kim in New Jersey. Thanks to Chris. Thanks to Kitty in Boston. Thanks to an anonymous contributor who finished off the fundraising so that we actually were at a, well, we'll get there. Thanks to Arthur, Roberto. Thank you to Edward and Roland. Thank you to Kenda and Kevin in Denver, or not Denver, Colorado Springs. Thank you to James in Illinois. Thank you to Glenn. Thank you to Paul. Thank you to Nagla. Thank you to Catherine, Thomas, Kelly, Stephen, John, Jean, and Ann. Thank you to Janice. Thank you all so very, very much. Those are, if you'd like to be a subscriber, you know, we're still looking for, someday, those $410 a month subscribers, and all we'll be doing is thanking subscribers every day, and then I won't say, and today's fundraising goal is. But today's fundraising goal is $200. Because y'all managed to make sure it was possible for me to come back and not be dealing with some whopping program-killing deficit. So thank you, thank you, thank you. So 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12 and a half, 32 at 6 and a quarter, and yes, 64 people at $3.13, because we round up that half penny. And what with warm weather coming on, with real alacrity, we're going to put it, we'll put that half penny in Agnes's tanning butter fund, okay? Yeah. Just run over to headon.live, click on the PayPal thingy on contribute, and go from there. Oh, thank you. In the chat room, Jimmy says, welcome back, Bob. Squeaky, home again. Yes, home again. Home again, jiggity jog. And by the way, if you'd like to be part of the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the hours in which this program is live, well, you're more than welcome to also click on chat room, where you will be immediately greeted by the likes of Jimmy and Squeaky, and capably moderated by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Thank you, another member of the fraternity of Steve. Thank you, Steve, in New York. Welcome back. I hope this doesn't sound selfish, but the updates and the success of the 8 campaign really gave me a little hope and joy in an altogether dark time. I know the feeling, Steve, because it's not selfish. We're moving forward. Things are happening. And part of the reason I'm not inclined to do the whole, what's that, Steve? Yeah. Subject line, tanning butter fund. Who's going to pay for the cabana boy to take care of the pool and the pool house? Well, that's part of the tanning butter fund, because the cabana boy also applies the tanning butter. We try to multitask around here. Yes. It was almost as the number of times that I have left D.C. in sunshine and crossed the Allegheny front into West Virginia to be met with lowered clouds and fog and grayness and cold and miserable are in the scope of me doing this for 10 years or so, so many that I don't think I can count them. But after what happened last week in D.C., it was almost as though West Virginia itself, I'm not talking about the political structure or, no, just the platonic ideal of West Virginia was smiling at me as I crossed under the Welcome to West Virginia sign and that song, The Hills of West Virginia, began playing in my mind. No, not Country Roads. That's a song about the Eastern Panhandle, for Christ's sakes. That song should, the opening line of that song should actually be, almost heaven, eastern panhandle, because there's nothing in the song that's really about West Virginia. But who am I to take issue with that? But it was as though the platonic ideal of West Virginia itself was welcoming me back, because the platonic ideal of West Virginia knew what had been done in her name. And yeah, I'm sorry, I'm old-fashioned, but she's a she. Because we struck a mighty blow last week. And yesterday. People may not realize it. God knows if you're watching the multimillionaire for-profit media, you don't know it. But history was made. I'm not kidding. Real, live, honest-to-God history was made. Because for the first time, a record was created of testimony not only of the abuses that this state and others in Appalachia have been subjected to as a result of coal mining operations. That's known. That's been a fact of life for a long time. But a record was made specifically of the abuses that the coal industry has subjected these states to by one particular practice, mountaintop removal, otherwise known as steep slope mining, in four states in Appalachia on a gradient of 20% or more that involves blasting. You know, in a way, even calling it mountaintop removal is a misnomer. Calling it surface mining is a misnomer. They're not removing the surface. When you've blown 1,000 feet off a fucking mountain, that ain't surface anymore. You're way down deep into doing auguries inside the guts of the mountain. Ooh, I found... why, look, it's the Beckley seam. This portends great profit in the future. Ooh. Praise be the god of carbon. Right? But yeah, history was made. Well, thank you, Steve. Steve in New York says, of course she's a she. Her name is West Virginia. Yeah, exactly. I didn't think about it that way, but yeah. Thank you very kindly to Ralphs. Ralphs says, welcome back, Bob. I'm getting lots and lots of snow right now. I hope you all don't get it. Oh, I do too. I saw that. Yeah, the second bomb, the late spring or early spring bomb cyclone of the mid. Oh, yuck. I hope it does not portend further great flooding. Stay warm, Ralphs. Stay warm. Meanwhile, Billable Rick, who cares not a whit for nasty grams from Ron and Raleigh's law firm, says, Bob, 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 coffee breaks over. Time to get back on your head. Precisely. By God, I like the way that man thinks. But, like I said, there was specific testimony, compelling testimony, for those of you who watched it, you know how much so, of just exactly how deep and how broad the abuse of this region has been with this nightmare mining practice called mountaintop removal. And working within the same imagery, it barely scratched the surface. It certainly didn't go 900 feet down. No. For those of you who have not yet seen it, it is available over at the House of Representatives Natural Resources Committee website. And of particular, well, now it's unfair to single out any one particular witness. The fact witnesses, Donna Branham and Carl Shoup, Donna Branham from West Virginia and Carl Shoup from Kentucky, were profound in their own right. But when Dr. Michael McCauley began testifying about the scientific reasons behind all of this, well, for starters, he made a damn fool out of a young fella by the name of Tyler White before Tyler White had even opened his poor little mouth eater. Because Tyler White went last. And Tyler White is the relatively newly minted president of the Kentucky Coal Association. And he had a statement that had been prepared for him that was a complete embarrassment. I'm sure the National Mining Association wrote it for him. Tyler didn't seem like the kind of fellow who could write it for himself. But after all the scientific evidence that Dr. McCauley mentioned, including the fact that he sits on the commission that deals with particulate dust inhalation and the disease and death that that has caused from the attacks of September 11th, 2001. Well, Tyler, poor little Tyler White of the Kentucky Coal Association, Coal Keeps the Lights On, was left to just read the boilerplate bullshit statement that had been provided to him by his masters higher up. For even though he may be the president of the West Virginia or the Kentucky Coal Association, he has no agency of his own. He does as he is told. And along the way, this is just some background that you wouldn't know if you just watched the hearing. Along the way, Carl Shoup and my colleague Bo Webb, both of whom served honorably in the United States Marine Corps and have the scars to prove it. Well, Tyler White volunteered to them that he, too, was a member of the Corps and that he, too, had served, that he had served two tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, in the modern wars of empire that were launched on that fateful day when the planes flew into the buildings, the World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan, and brought those buildings down and lifted up for a day or two, not for 20 years, mind you, but for maybe a week, maybe two, a massive cloud of toxic ultrafine dust that continues to kill to this day, and which I never forget, took from us one of our dearest, dearest friends years ago now, because she breathed that shit. And it stole her ability to breathe at all. Mm-hmm. And so I was watching from behind, and I saw him fidget. Because remember, the Republican, the ranking member of that subcommittee who showed up, was a representing Dr. Paul Gosar of Arizonistan. Now, this is a member of Congress who is so loathed by his own family that his own family endorsed his Democratic opponent in the last election. He's a Lulu and a one of your more hateful maggots in the House of Representatives. You may recall Paul Gosar as the guy who explained to the world that he knew a little bit about body language because, I'm using the wrong accent, of course, he knew a little bit about the body language because, well, he's a dentist. I'm figuring if you're a dentist, the body language with which you're most familiar is probably cringing and that sort of thing you do where you try to wiggle your ass backwards up out of the dentist chair as, you know, as Devisa Angle is coming at you with the goddamn drill and the needle and the torture instruments. And anyway, when in response to a question, Dr. McCauley mentioned being on the 9/11 commission dealing with the toxicity of particulate dust, young Mr. White kind of fidgeted and flinched a little bit. And on the one hand, one explanation would be that he realized that, well, his little canned statement had done nothing whatsoever to in any wise attempt to refute the validity of the science that was being put forward. And really, the National Mining Association hasn't had much luck with that, having done things, and I mentioned this before, like saying that one of the birth defect study was invalid because it failed to take into account hillbillies having sex with their kinfolks. But I instead thought maybe he was fidgeting for a different reason. I thought perhaps he might be remembering one of his tours in our War of Empire in Bush War II, or would it be Bush War III? Bush War II would be Afghanistan. Bush War I was the first Iraq war. Bush War II is Afghanistan. Bush War III is Iraq. And I thought he might be remembering some of those vast clouds of toxic dust that explosives landing on, say, mountain hillsides in Afghanistan tend to produce. Or maybe mortar fire. But I kind of rejected that theory. And instead, it occurred to me that maybe he was remembering when he signed up. And how he signed up because of what they done to us on 9/11. Maybe, because perhaps for his generation, those planes flying into that tower are the equivalent to what to the Zapruder film for another generation. And maybe he was remembering how that was part of the motivation for signing up in the first place. To get even. Or maybe not even to get even, but to make sure it never happens again. Right? And that was the one I landed on as being the most likely answer. And that if in fact the dust that had killed so many of his countrymen in New York, Lower Manhattan, as the result of a terrorist bombing, if that bombing could produce that kind of dust, then maybe talking about all that blasting dust in Appalachia wasn't a liberal plot after all. Maybe. Yeah. But the testimony was compelling. And he had nothing. All he had was, "Well, hell, they'll stop us from strip mining anywhere in Appalachia if this here bill passes." And once again, it's like, duh! You want a blast? Cool. Make sure you're none of your filthy fucking dust comes down on the innocent people who live around you who would have to breathe it. Put a great big geodesic dome over the whole mountain and blast the fuck away. But make sure the dust doesn't leave that dome. Make sure only your mountaintop removal workers are breathing it. and then try to explain to their families at their funerals why you did it. And make sure the shockwaves from that one single blast that equals 25 cruise missiles landing in one place at the same time doesn't reverberate through the earth itself seismically and rock foundations and crack wells and allow your industry's poisons to enter people's drinking water. Do that too. Yeah. Or maybe Tyler White was thinking back to the fact that when somebody used planes as missiles to bomb our country, that we went to war. And that his comrades in arms had shed their blood and their lives to defeat that enemy. You know, a long time ago, we used to say that if a foreign country did to Appalachia what the coal industry does every day except Sundays and Christmas, that we would go to war with them. Well, it wasn't Appalachia, but that's exactly what happened. And through the testimony yesterday, we learned that, in fact, for as long as they've been doing this, that the coal industry has been at war with the people of Appalachia. It's another one of those moments when I realize that, yeah, people in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone of Appalachia have far more in common with someone living in Gaza than people living in lots of other places right here in the United States. It was profound. It was powerful. But again, you'd never know it if all you did was turn on the multimillionaire for-profit media. Because, and we monitored when we got back, it was all Bill Barr all the time. And we'll be back with more Bill Barr right after this message from our corporate sponsors. And then when they felt like they had really wrung everything out of the Bill Barr story, they decided to go to the Steve Mnuchin story. I am not in any wise suggesting that those stories are not meritorious, that they do not have worth. They are both important stories. But goddamn, exposing the systematic killing over the course of two decades of more than 20,000 American citizens by nothing more than a shitty, profit-grubbing hydrocarbon industry, and that can't even get a goddamn mention? Jesus! So, but like I said, when I crossed in to West Virginia today, there was not a cloud in the sky. Every growing thing had a blossom on it. I could see at the distance from the highway gentle breezes blowing through tree limbs. And the one thing I look for in spring, more than any other thing I saw today when I came into West Virginia, the red buds are blooming. It's just a brief little time span here in Appalachia, but for a couple of weeks, the forests on the mountains turn pink. And it is nothing short of glory. And it happens at about the same time that the peepers are waking up in their wet and watery worlds and croaking out their joy at having been able to crawl back out of hiding, or maybe their brand new lives, and yelling, "I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm alive. And by the way, I'd like to get laid, laid, laid." Because that's what the peepers are yelling about. Note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Subject line, the hearing. The comparison to 9/11 by Dr. McCauley was excellent. Committee Chair Lowenthal was excellent. Mr. Shoup was quite a character, and his hillbilly reference was precious. Saw you in the background. Love the bow tie. Thank you. The ranking member was a jerk. What? All for 5,100 plus jobs? Mr. Shoup dispensed with that BS when he talked about how miners are being replaced with equipment anyway, to the degree that only a few men actually had jobs in that destructive industry. I had the hearing playing on my computer here in my office, and my assistant, who is my sister as well, was totally livid and in shock over mountaintop removal and what was happening in Appalachia. She had no idea this was happening and was irate over the lack of attendance to the hearing by other Congress critters. I tried to explain that many were at other hearings voting. At least I hope that was the case. Educating one person at a time, Bob. Educating one person at a time. It was well worth the watch. I rewatched it later that evening. Thank you and Bo Webb for what you're doing. And, welcome home. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you. And, you know, there's a link out there. Spread it around on social media. Maybe, like, quit telling us how to share on social media, Bob. I figured I'd just save you the fucking trouble and just take care of that myself. But you can share it on social media and say, oh, by the way, you missed this. Because it deserves a wide viewing. And one of the telltale, you know, there's a sort of corporate way, predatory corporate way of addressing a problem in this country. And the tobacco industry used it. And hell, before the tobacco industry used it, the coal industry was using it. And the gun assholes use it. An aside. So as I'm zipping along I-66 westbound out of D.C. today, I always make a point of making an obscene gesture. Fight the power, man. Making an obscene gesture at the headquarters of the National Ruble Association. But for some reason today, I noticed there's signage at the top of the building. And I can honestly say I'd never seen it before, and I wonder if it's new. But it says, National Rifle Association of America. And that made me wonder. It's a big, expensive glass cube sitting in Fairfax County, Virginia. And you wonder why that of America has to be on there. Maybe you need the modifier there, because given what we now know about the people they pal around with, for all we know, there's a similar highway leading out of Moscow in Mother Russia that says National Rifle Association of Mother Russia. It just, like I said, just an aside. Oh, where was I? Oh, wait a minute. I got to check in with Ron. Subject line, gimmick infringement. Will Billable Rick be defending himself, or will he be retaining counsel? Oh, I'm sure he'll check in with a friend at the bar. One never represents oneself, unless one wants a fool for a client and an idiot for a lawyer. No. That was Paul Gosar that I made the dentist reference to, Irish Dave. Irish Dave said, and did Dr. McCauley ask repeatedly, is it safe? No, that would be Paul Gosar. Oh, darn it, I took off down that little aside for the down that little aside road for the National Rifle Association, and where I was going next sort of plumb evades me. And this is what comes of working without notes. Now, what was that? No, we did it. Well, I don't know. Maybe it'll come to me later. But all told, it was one of the most productive weeks, well, week and a half, that I've ever spent in D.C. Like I said before, we made over 100 contacts. And what's that? Billable Rick says, in response to Ron's query, I'll be retaining counsel from Up the Hill Bar, most likely one of the members of my nine-ball team. Well, that sounds... yeah. Okay, Brother Deacon Asa, getting to the heart of the matter. Cut the crap! Where are them ramps at, Bob? Are they budding yet? Well, ramps don't bud, bud. But yeah, they're up. A couple of my favorite restaurants over in Fayetteville are offering ramp-inspired dishes right now, and I'm anxious to try a couple of them. So, yeah. So is there still activism to do? There's still activism to do. We're kind of waiting now to see what happens when and if the committee goes into markup on this bill. That's what has to happen before it can go to the floor. And we're eager to see it do that. And so there will probably be another D.C. trip in the offing, but I don't know when. And frankly, I hope I get a couple of weeks at home before I have to head back. And by the way, thank you. I'm glad you like the bow tie, Darlene. A bow tie can be a hazardous choice, but I felt like it was okay. Had my funeral director suit on, all black and everything. And I thought that little bow tie just sort of gave it a bit of panache. That or made me look like Floyd the Barber, or as our buddy Horst pointed out, he saw the photo I posted of Bo and me standing in front of the Capitol, and Horst said, "You look like the cleaner from Pulp Fiction and a popcorn salesman. I'll leave it to you to sort out who's who." Wasn't a lot of sorting to be done. The bow tie is always the giveaway. Always. But that's okay. I got a kick out of it. Popcorn salesman. I always think Floyd the Barber. But I'm also proud of the fact that... I mean, yeah, because... proud. I can tie one of the little bastards. Took years of practice. Oh, and in the real world of coal in Appalachia, a little bit of sorta, kinda, but not really breaking news. The governor of this state, Jim Justice, ironically named, I think we must say, back when he was running for governor, back in 2016, when certain journalists said to him, well, Jim, buddy, you got a whole bunch of unpaid fines from the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Because remember, Jim Justice is the only billionaire in the state of West Virginia. And the only billionaires in the state of West Virginia is a billionaire in large part because he's a fucking coal baron. Well, back in 2016, he said, "We'll absolutely make sure that every one of the debts is taken care of." That was the day he announced his candidacy for governor. Yeah, well, he took office in January of 2017. It's April of 2019, according to my cipher, and that's more than 2 years. And now the debt from his deadbeat coal companies for mine safety violations, you know, the sort of things that get people killed, is over $4 million. Oh, I realize that in a world where we talk about people who are billionaires, like Jim Justice, $4 million probably seems like chump change, especially to us. But $4 million is still a lot of money to be in the hole with. And it's money owed to the federal government. And, you know, if the President of the United States, who is nominally in charge of things like the Mine Safety and Health Administration, was not a fucking crook in the first place, maybe we'd try to collect it. Let's say, for instance, let's pick something real low-grade and pissant. Let's say you've got a $5 parking ticket and you don't pay it. Well, they'll start adding interest and penalties to that when you fail to pay it. Say it blew off of your car windshield and you didn't even know it was there. Well, when that thing gets up around $100, they'll start sending letters to you saying, "We're going to revoke your driver's license. We're going to put a lien on your home." Nobody's put a lien on Jim Justice's home over this $4 million. Nobody's revoked his operator's privileges in this state. Because I guess when you've got a debt that's in the neighborhood of $4 million, you can just kind of blow it off. So when he was asked about it this time, they sent him off to a lawyer. And get this, the fines go all the way back to 2009. And they cover 71 mines in Alabama, Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia, and Virginia. Jim Justice's company's fines amount to 10% of all the delinquent fines that mining companies owe in the country. So wait a minute, 10%, 4 million, if 4 million is 10%, then $40 million. So there's $40 million of deadbeat unpaid coal. Wow. Oh, I know what. Oh, wait. I got to go back now. It was the business about the coal industry and the tobacco industry and the gun assholes. Using the same tactics in response to criticism. That's what I was forgetting. It's like a steel trap, this thing. Rusted shut. So way back when Black Lung was first being noticed to be a thing, the coal industry knew they were killing their workers, but they also didn't want to pay for it because as the Jim Justice delinquent fines story shows, usually they're a bunch of no good deadbeats. So way, way, way back when they first discovered black lung, the coal industry responded by saying, "Well, I ain't no really such thing as black lung. That's just a bunch of belly-aching, ne'er-do-well, malingering coal miners that don't want to work, and they're all cigarette smokers. We done seen them. They smoke like chimbleys, and that's what it is. It's that cigarette smoking." Meanwhile, the tobacco industry said, "Fuck it is! Cigarette smoking's good for you." So eventually, black lung gets recognized, and along the way, somebody may have noticed, it's largely been forgotten, that coal companies lie like a goddamn rug. Yeah. And along comes Big Tobacco, who finds out a long time ago that cigarette smoking is bad for you and kills people, and lung cancer, and emphysema, and chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder, and so forth. And they did everything in their power to hide and bury that. And now we come up a little closer in time to the National Ruble Association. And these guys are particularly comical, were the situation not so godforsaken tragic. And what they'll do is, they'll say, if somebody says, "Well, you know, I don't think we need to be selling clips for guns that hold more than 9 rounds. And one of the NRA assholes will say, see, that stupid liberal done said clip. It ain't a clip, you stupid liberal. It's a magazine. You don't even know about guns. How are you going to talk about taking them away from me? Taking them from my cold dead fingers. Stupid liberals. Assault rifle. Well, any rifle is an assault rifle. If you can assault somebody with it, you're just trying to take away everybody's guns, stupid liberal." We got a little dose of that yesterday, too. Because, of course, the National Mining Association didn't just write poor little Tyler White's blather. They wrote it for... They wrote the statement for Paul Body Language Gosar as well. And in both instances, "Well, there's only 8 real mountaintop removal operations in Appalachia. Everything else just surface mining. It's just surface mining. Stupid liberal. Don't know the difference between mountaintop removal and surface mining, contour mining, cross ridge mining, mountaintop mining. They ain't but 8 mountaintop. See, but y'all done drafted your bill wrong. You say mountaintop removal, but you keep talking about all that blasting and stuff, and so no fair. This bill shouldn't pass, stupid liberal, because you don't know the right words. And even if you do, we'd still say they was the wrong ones, stupid liberals." Yeah, see, Otto over on social media says, "I got that shit once on Twitter about assault rifles. I was told I was a libtard, and that isn't an assault rifle. I posted a JPEG, and the rifle was an AR-15, Otto says. That's an assault rifle." Mm-hmm. So that's what they're down to. They couldn't challenge the science in the least. They've tried and they've failed. They've spent millions of dollars trying to refute the science, but the fact of the matter is, every single piece of science regarding human health in Appalachia and mountaintop removal has been peer-reviewed. Now, I realize the fiends of coal, the Fockers, don't understand what peer-reviewed means, but the rest of us do. And by the way, Dr. McCauley's, Chairman Lowenthal asked a question of Dr. McCauley because Dr. McCauley had made reference to, and I want to make sure I get this right, so let me get my notebook. Got me a notebook for taking notes. I wonder if I'll still be able to read what I writ. Stupid liberal. Yeah, Dr. McCauley said the evidence is not merely correlative, but causal. Which somewhere along the way, between yesterday and today, some idiot maggot had turned into casual. Because maggots and grammar do not get along well at all. And so Chairman Lowenthal asked Dr. McCauley about what not merely correlative but causal means. And he answered it brilliantly in a way that probably everybody but a maggot could understand. He said, my favorite example of the difference between causation and correlation is the notion that someone can say, every time I eat ice cream, I see a butterfly. And I was sitting back there. I tried not to pick my nose or scratch my little pumpkin head or anything once Agnes had sent me a screenshot of the fact that I was on the TV box. But I was at, what? Butterflies, ice cream. And he said, but it turns out that we eat ice cream in hot weather and butterflies come out in hot weather. Well, eating ice cream doesn't cause the appearance of butterflies. And butterflies appearing doesn't cause you to need to eat ice cream. There's no causation between those two, but there is a correlation with the fact that it happens in warm weather. And I'm sitting there going, wow, dude. And so he made it real simple for people to understand. Causation is when you can draw a bright line from one thing to the next. Correlation is just a couple of things happen to... Well, another great example of correlation is if you buy a new car, the next thing you know, it'll seem like every other car you see out on the highway is your car. Because you've sort of tuned yourself for that. But you didn't cause other people to buy the car, and other people didn't cause you to buy the car. But when you collect dust samples on a mountaintop removal site, and you also collect them in somebody's yard, and then you look at them under a microscope, and they are identical, and when you subject human lung tissue to those dust samples, and they both begin demonstrating mutagenic, tumorogenic changes, then you've got causation. Just like the causation that has been found and is not disputed in Lower Manhattan. And when you get right down to it, probably even further away. And that's especially the case in Appalachia, because these blasts carry the dust up into industrial-grade wind speeds. Imagine something the size of 1/1,000th of a human hair being grabbed by a 150-mile-an-hour wind. How far you reckon that wind can carry that dust particle? Long way. Long way. Ah, thank you, Irish Dave, with a link to an article from Duke University. Irish Dave noting, them Duke U types are real good, ain't they? Well, I guess they're good enough. Makes me proud to know, though, that when a great deal of the research was done by Dr. Michael Hendricks, he did it at West Virginia University. And Dr. McCauley continues to perform his work as well at West Virginia University in the School of Public Health. So that's sort of my day yesterday. It was good to see some friends and colleagues that I hadn't seen in years who came up for the hearing. It turned out we didn't have to worry about the Republicans making any trouble because they just didn't show up. Maybe some of them were desperately trying to protect Bill Barr to prosecution, or Steve, we've got a Mnuchin plugging the swamp drain, Mnuchin. By the way, courtesy of Dr. John, a new name. A friend of his coined it for Stephen Miller. Pee Wee Herman Goering. Yeah, Stephen Miller, Pee Wee Herman Goering. That's quality is what that is. But there will be next steps. And all I can ask, and I'm not telling, stop telling, Bob, all I can ask is that you continue to reach out to your members of Congress. Don't ask once and let them forget you. Persist. The bill launched with a dozen co-sponsors. I think there are a couple more being added. And Bo and I educated a whole bunch. But there is more work to do. And it badly needs doing. Stephen, New York. Dr. Hendricks, is that the guy on the TED Talk? If so, I'd commend that to people. Yes. Dr. Michael Hendricks, H-E-N-D-R-Y-X. A couple of years ago, he gave a TED Med Talk. And so if you go to your preferred search engine and you type in TED Med, T-E-D-M-E-D, and then you give yourself a space and put mountaintop removal, it should pop at the top of the list. And it is 20 minutes that will change your life. Speaking of life changing, I'm not sure if Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has made her tour of a coal mine in Kentucky yet, but I sure as shit hope somebody flies her over a mountaintop removal site. Or maybe somebody should have her visit somebody impacted by mountaintop removal. I cannot tell you how proud I was that she jumped on the bill with a will right away. Didn't have to be asked twice. Okay. Small jingle for Lee in New York. Peer-reviewed? P-I-E-R. West Virginia ain't nowhere near the water, Bob. Had that one coming, didn't I? Yep. We ain't nowhere near the ocean. Ron in Raleigh says, are you trying to say, does that make Jim Injustice a deadbeat mine owner? He has the same out as Donald Trump. If you owe enough money, the government and banks cross their fingers and hope against hope they'll get some of their money in the future or from their estates when they go on to their long home. But yeah, for God's sakes, let's not threaten to put anybody in jail or do anything that otherwise inconveniences them, because jobs! You know, 10 years ago when I was doing this work, 20 years ago when I was doing this work, you'd hear these freaks say, Why, there's a hundred umpty bajillion coal jobs in this here state. And yesterday they confessed there's 5,000 or less. But nonetheless, even though Barack Obama's not in office, they found a government overregulation killed them jobs. Nah, fracking killed them jobs. And you know what else killed them jobs? Mountaintop removal. Because 10 guys taking down 5,000 acres in 5 years beats the hell out of paying a crew of 100 over the course of God only knows how long to go underground. You don't need them. They're not needed anymore. That's one of the odd things about all this. The one group that has done more to prove that coal miners are no longer necessary is the coal industry itself. As I've said before, there's a panoramic photo from 1920 down at Tudor's Biscuit World of the day shift of the Gauley Mountain Coal Company. There's about 100 folks in there, black and white alike. And that was just the day shift. There were two more of those shifts, and that was just one coal mine. And the place was dotted with them. They were needed. But the whole time, and that was 1920, coal bosses were scratching their little heads, saying, wonder how we can do this with less fellers. Not because we're worried about killing them or anything, but because, well, if we have less of them, there's more money for us. It's the same economic principle you can find walking into a grocery store or a big box store where they've set up a self-checkout area for you, where you can do their work of checking out their stuff for them. Because all conservative economic policies look first to the worker as a cost that they would rather not pay. That's why on strip mines in vast and remote areas of Australia, the trucks and the dozers do what the trucks and the dozers do, but there's no human beings on them or in them. Instead, there's some little dweeb back in a shack somewhere playing the video, the equivalent of a video game about strip mining. And eventually, if they get to continue in doing this, they'll do that here too. It's just not as easy to do on ground that's not so flat, especially in the early stages of the operation. So here we are at the top of the hour. We started the program with $200 to raise, and we've still got $200 to raise. Hopefully that will not persist, because, well, I'm back. There's a shit ton of bills to pay. Eliminating workers, Lee says, remember how ATMs changed banking? Ta-da! Exactly. You want to engage in some conversation? The lines are open. 304-574-8178 or Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. And, of course, the stress line, toll-free, from the U.S., Canada, or Mexico. And remember, we're still looking for our first phone call from Mexico. Sorry, it'll need to be an English-speaking phone call from Mexico because my Spanish sucketh. But that's 844-THE-HORN, 844-843-4483. 4676. What's that, Scott in San Diego? Self-checkout? Grocery store self-checkout. My big white ass, Bob. No, I stand in line, too. I figure every time I use the self-checkout, I'm probably taking another step toward putting somebody else out of work. All right, let's run over and check in on the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program. Is that you, Rick?
It is. How are you, Bob?
You know, I'm back. I'm happy. I cannot tell you how happy I am to be home.
Yeah, it sounds beautiful. Your drive back to West Virginia. Wow.
Yeah, it was lovely. It was just lovely.
Yeah, we're having our share of super blooms out here in California, too, with all the rain we had. You know, the hillsides are just a, you know, verdant kind of a canary yellow color from all the goldenrod and the, I think the, what is it, the clover or whatever, you know, the yellow clover. It's beautiful. You know, beautiful,
yeah,
out there.
And I think verdant means green, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, actually, you're right.
Hey, just checking. Sorry. I'm an asshole that way.
No, that's okay. No, that's fine. You're a knower of English, Bob. You know, what can you say? But, yeah, the poppies are in full force. And
poppies.
Crazy winds, but, yeah, California poppies, yeah. Yeah, beautiful orange. Oh, man. Yeah, you know, I haven't been up to the poppy preserve, but I went up there a few years ago when you had a pretty good bloom. And, boy, I bet this year's even better, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, it's in north L.A. County, far north L.A. County, like as you're heading up towards the not quite to the great California Valley, but sort of headed that way, Lancaster, Palmdale, that area. But, yeah, so what's it doing there today? You have a beautiful day still, Bob?
Yeah, it's exquisite. It is absolutely
awesome.
And there may be a couple of minutes of daylight left by the time we're done with the program.
Very good for you. Very good for you. Maybe you have time to do a little lawn mowing, huh?
Yeah, no. I'll get into weed eater mode this weekend if it's still cooperating.
Yeah. So, I'm glad that the hearing went well. So, how long did it last exactly?
It was about. They had to take a break because there were votes going on the floor. Even after the break, we were done by 4:30 or so.
Okay.
But then that precluded getting back in time to get on the air because, well, battling.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. DC traffic. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's part of the fun of being in the metro area, you know, as I know full well from being here in LA. We had some crazy-ass winds last night. They just, like, popped up about maybe 2 in the afternoon, and, like, you could hear the office windows shake here where I am, and, you know, it was a white-knuckle ride back home last night, you know, battling headwinds, you know, pushing my car this way and that way, you know, so pretty weird. But it's beautiful today. It seems to have calmed down. Probably 75, I'm guessing, maybe 80. So I guess it was the northerly Santa Ana, not quite straight from the desert, but the one more from the north, and it kind of, you know, cooled things off a bit, like into the 50s, you know.
Yeah, we've got the AC going now in the studio, and it's a lovely 78 degrees in here.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And I'm not going to ask you if you're doing whatever kind of radio you're doing.
Yes, I am, as a matter of fact, because.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I thank you for reminding me because I neglected to mention that I'm so happy to be home. I am, in fact, doing naked radio.
Is it just naked or is it pornographic as well?
No, it's naked. It's not naked.
Yeah. So
because I checked in with the boss, and Agnes says maybe we can start trying to do the Facebook video, maybe sometime next week or something.
Oh, well, good. That would be lovely. I mean, you probably have the equipment probably would allow for that more than the old stuff, right? The new stuff.
Well, that's why I was able to do it while I was up in D.C.
Right.
Because there's a channel that I can plug into a phone and turn on Facebook Live, and away we go.
Yeah, that's amazing, you know, the Facebook Live. I mean, it's also amazing in terms of, you know, for nefarious things like that, you know, that asshole Killer recently turned it on, and you know, in
yeah, that was
Christchurch. Wow. Yeah, yeah, man, you know, that's like what was that movie? It was a Tarantino. What is it? Natural Born Killers. It's sort of
yeah.
like along the lines of a guy like that.
Yeah, who was that? Julia Lewis and
Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was scary.
That was a creepy movie.
That was scary shit. That was a Tarantino film, right?
I think so, yeah.
Well, he's got a new one coming out. You might know. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's about the days leading up to and just after the Manson family killed Sharon Tate and all those other folks, as well as the LoBiancas. And Brad Pitt and who is it?
Is Brad Pitt playing Manson?
No. They're like playing a couple of journeyman actors. It's Brad and Leo DiCaprio.
Oh, Natural Born Killers was Oliver Stone.
Right. Okay.
Thank you, Scott.
That's right. That's right. There you go. Well, it could have been Tarantino. You know, it's more Tarantino than Stone in terms of the way you imagine. At least the thematic elements, the violence, that kind of thing, you know. Tarantino's definitely known for that. But it's good to have people keeping you honest, Bob, you know. That's for sure. So that should be a good movie. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I'm looking forward to that. You never know with Tarantino.
Well, you know, that plays on a film title from the 70s, Once Upon a Time in the West.
Right.
And wasn't that hyper-violent?
I do believe so. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, I think so. So, can we go back to the subcommittee hearing?
We can go anywhere you want to go.
Okay, that sounds great. How many members are on that subcommittee?
How many licks does it take to get to the
bottom,
to the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop? Let's find out.
yeah.
Let's look and see.
Yeah, I'm just curious about the attendance of the Democratic members versus the Republicans. I'm sure that the Democrats, you know, attended that much more.
No, they didn't. It was Congressman Lowenthal and Diana DeJette showed up later.
Okay.
Committee Democrats are Lowenthal, Levin of California, Cunningham of South Carolina, McEachin of Virginia, DeJette of Colorado, Anthony Brown of Maryland, Jared Huffman of California, Matt Cartwright of Pennsylvania, and Raul Grijalva.
Okay.
And they don't show who the Repiglicans were, but the ranking member we know is Dr. Paul I Know Body Language Gosar.
Can he diagnose people via the internet as well?
Or via
TV, like one cat did, Bill Frist?
Yeah, like Bill Cat Killer Frist, yes.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Well, I guess the idea is at least it got a public airing, and was the committee chairperson there or not?
Well, the subcommittee chair was there. Congressman Grijalva was not, but he's on the bill, and we know he's solidly behind it.
Okay, good.
Oh, well, and by the way, another thing you'll enjoy, one of the things that Chairman Lowenthal pointed out was that they had invited, wait a minute, I'm going to have to get my notebook back out, shouldn't have put it away. They had invited a member of the Department of Interior to attend.
Okay.
And the invitation was declined. he refused the invitation, Jim Carson.
Okay.
Because he said, and it was in regard to the sleazy killing off of the health of the health data review.
Yeah.
Under as phony a pretense as has ever been offered. And he said, I decline to attend because the issue has already been resolved.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, bear in mind, Rick, this was a $1 million review.
Uh-huh.
With a grant from the Department of Interior to the National Academy of Science.
Right.
And only half of the money had been spent.
Okay.
So as far as we know, the maggots stole $500,000.
Oh, jeez.
So the matter has already been resolved. May refer to the fact that, I don't know, maybe Ryan Zinke took it and went to and went and played one spin of the roulette wheel with $500,000 and said, red, no, black, no, red. Oh, shit.
Oh, man, that guy went through money like crazy, you know?
What
really galls me, Bob, is these people have to resign in disgrace. I mean, I don't know if they can feel disgrace, but they have to resign because of all the ethical improprieties. And then, poof, all those ethical investigations go away. And there's never any criminal charges these cats have to face, you know?
Well, see, that's what...
isn't it great to be a rich Republican?
God, I mean, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R on steroids.
Yeah, I mean, it almost makes you want to become a Republican, except for the fact that you got to live with yourself. You know? Oh, I tell you, you know? But, who the hell knows what happened to that other 500,000? And the health review was showing that, you know, there was a causative effect, right, between the...
That's what all of these things demonstrate.
Yeah.
By the way, Randy in PA, and this is cowbell worthy, that roulette wheel came up green.
Oh, I guess that's the Republican roulette wheel, right? It has the
it's got the red, it's got the black, it's got the green.
Yeah.
And Green New Deal. See what Randy did there?
Yeah. Yeah.
I never dreamed I could have made money betting on green.
There you go. I guess, realistically, Bob, I guess the hope is that, you know, you'll see some maybe, what, further committee hearing? Would that be the next step then? Would it be a committee hearing?
Markup. Markup is next.
Okay, markup is next. And then a committee hearing? And then a vote, maybe?
Well, at markup, there should be a vote.
Okay. Right.
And, I mean, just for fun, who is your member?
Adam Schiff.
He's on the bill.
Is he? Good. Okay, good.
He was an original co-sponsor. Didn't waste any time.
Good. Did you get a chance to meet with him? Probably not, because he's such a busy guy.
No, but I stopped by and made my little pitch in the office and left him a flyer and a card, and everybody was surprised that he signed on.
Hmm. Well, that's good. Well, you mean like the staffers of other members?
I mean just us.
Oh, you guys. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm really not, because he's a very thoughtful guy. You know, I'm glad to have him as my representative. Very thankful to have him as my representative. I mean, God knows you could do a hell of a lot worse, you know?
Oh, yeah. And there are more that are supposed to be getting on, but yeah, the list is AOC, Jerry Connolly from Virginia, Diana DeJette of Colorado, Matt Cartwright of Pennsylvania, Paul Tonko of New York, Adam Schiff, Steve Cohen of Tennessee, he's really cool, Earl Blumenauer of Oregon, Don Beyer of Virginia, Raul Grijalva of Arizona, Ro Khanna of California, and Betty McCollum.
Okay. That's a great start.
I mean, I would love to see, and we focused our efforts on the freshmen this time through.
Right.
And I would love to see, for instance, Jahana Hayes on it. I'd like to see Rashida Tlaib on it. And I've got a feeling a couple of friends I made standing in line may be working on her.
Okay.
I'd really like to see, because she replaced a Democrat who was on the bill the last time through, and that's Ayanna Pressley from up in Massachusetts.
Okay, right.
But we talked to or flyered the entire new freshman class, and then flyered a whole bunch more.
Well done, well done.
And I made a personal ask of a new guy from up in Minnesota. He just happened to, I'm sure he considered it. I'm not sure. But he just happened to be standing in his office, Dean Phillips, when I walked in. I said, you know, we need you on the bill.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's nice when you can have a whole bunch of co-sponsors, Rick.
Right.
But as long as they vote the right way, they don't have to be on the bill.
That's true. That's true.
But one of the things we talked about extensively is that for anybody who comes into this Congress on fire to deal with climate change.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's no better bill, because this is one of the few substantive climate change bills that's in the Congress right now.
It's concrete.
Because when you think about the million acres of carbon capturing forest that's been eliminated, then you understand that not eliminating any more of it saves a whole lot of carbon sink.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then keeping that goddamn coal in the ground adds a double bonus.
Absolutely does, sure, sure. Yeah, well, I think, so you're hoping for markup, what, sometime in June, most likely?
We really have no idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And frankly, it's also in two other committees.
Oh, okay.
It's in transportation and infrastructure, and energy and commerce.
Okay.
So, for all I know, they may decide to hold their own hearing.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Or they may just cede jurisdiction to Mr. Grijalva.
Mm-hmm. That's the Natural Resources Committee, right, Grijalva?
Yeah, he's Natural Resources.
Okay. Yeah.
And we entered that hearing room, and there's a big old portrait right where, just to the left of where we were sitting, hanging way up on the wall as if he was a gargoyle looking down on us. My former congressman, Nick Joe Rahal.
Oh.
who was a real environmental hero to people out west. I mean, he got a Humane Society Award because he saved some wild horses once.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a picture of him because he's the father of the New River Gorge National Park System. He made that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a portrait of him sitting there in his shirt sleeves rolled up with his, you know, one elbow leaning on a knee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as though he's on a rock that's overlooking the magnificence and the majesty of the New River Gorge.
Mm.
And I kind of elbowed Bo and pointed up, and he went, oh, my God. And I said, interesting how none of the mountains behind him are blown all to hell now, ain't it?
No. So he had a mixed record on the environment, is the sense I'm getting from your.
He had a good record everywhere but here. But as for here, well, I mean, the poor man toward the end of his career was reduced to doing things like jumping out of airplanes to prove how much he loved coal.
Oh, God.
I'm not shitting you.
He
skydived.
Yeah.
For the Friends of Coal Festival in Beckley.
Oh, jeez.
And so we say, and then got voted out of office anyway because he was, he is seen one time not spitting at the feet of that one what lived in our White House for 8 years.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And he was known to have once not referred to Hillary Clinton as the devil.
Oh,
and that was all it took.
Hey, there you go.
Insufficient ideological purity.
now you're making, you know, you're making West Virginia great again with the Republican representative to take his place, right?
Two of them. Evan Jenkins did it for a little bit and then got his ass handed to him because he decided to run for Senate. Okay. And so he lost his seat in the House, and he was replaced by Carol Miller.
Oh, geez.
A rich white lady who makes a big deal out of how she always asked Jesus which way to vote before she casts any legislative vote, and it turns out Jesus always tells her to vote like a goddamn Republican.
Oh, geez. Amazing. Amazing how Jesus is a Republican, you know? She's the lady. Is she also like on the either the intelligence committee or the judiciary committee? And sounds like a church lady.
Yes. Like the one
like
time we heard
or
from
librarian,
her.
Librarian, even.
Which hearing was it where she got to speak? It was a big. Who was it? Was recent.
I think it had to do with maybe Michael Cohen was testifying.
Oh, no. She's the one that worries about babies having sex in the womb.
Oh, my God. Well, I think I got a solution for that, Bob. You need to Sister Carol's electric cattle prod on her on these women a couple of times to set their kids right, you know. What do you think?
I'm not going to say that on the air because I don't care to be visited by a man in a black suit with a white shirt and a skinny black tie talking to his wristwatch.
Okay, I said it for you.
Kiazi in the chat room just said, did that white lady ask Afro-Jesus or the other one, the real one? No, she asked white Jesus. But this is kind of interesting, just an aside.
Okay.
Bo had never been to the National Gallery of Art.
All right.
So we had a weekend there, and Saturday, Bo's a painter, and a pretty good one, too.
Okay.
And more than anything, he wanted to go see the Monets and the Renoirs, you know, the French Impressionists.
Oh, those are wonderful, yeah.
But the way they've got it laid out, you walk into the West Gallery and you start in one room. The next thing you know, you're wandering through the history of Western art, beginning with the Byzantine Empire and the 1200s.
Okay.
And it was the damnedest thing. I mean, they've done a great job preserving and restoring and protecting those paintings, but it begins with religious iconography. You can actually see the move toward humanism as you move through the rooms.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
right.
It's the very first Jesus you see. And this is something that was painted in, you know, probably Constantinople of 1260.
Okay.
So this is every bit of 1,200 years after the life of whoever Jesus may have been.
So it wasn't the Swedish Jesus with blonde hair and blue eyes and all that, right?
He's a black dude.
Okay. Oh,
at the very least, he's a brown dude.
Yes, yes.
And even as a baby, he's a little brown baby.
Right.
And I got to figure that probably drives, since it's prayer meeting Wednesday, that probably drives the evangelicals right up a tree.
Oh, no kidding. You know, maybe they even nailed themselves right in with.
Is that Jesus? That can't be Jesus. Maybe that's the guy they crucified next to Jesus.
Barabbas.
You know, they're all criminals anyway. Yeah.
No, actually, Barabbas got freed.
No, yeah, that's Barabbas. No, this is the two thieves next to him on the cross.
Yeah. I don't know if those guys had names. At least not that we know of.
No, I don't think we get a name.
I don't think we get a name.
It's probably Beavis and Butthead or... Maybe it was Don and Eric.
Who dink? Who say?
Don. Let's stick with Don and Eric.
Okay. Okay. Oh, my gosh.
We just had a note from Scott in San Diego. This one's for Horn family members in Rhode Island and Delaware who still need to contact their congressional representative about supporting the HAIC Act. 1 million acres of forest is bigger than the state of Rhode Island and about 2/3 of the size of Delaware. And oddly enough, the way it works out, the amount of ground that has been destroyed and blown up in Appalachia is equal to the size of Delaware.
Hmm. So it's a million acres then that's been destroyed.
More than.
More than that. Shit. Wow.
Oh, wow. By the way, Carol Miller has gotten shitty.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Hasn't she always been?
Well, okay, this is kind of like...
What's changed?
Okay, this is more catty than shitty.
Okay.
So, Agnes communicates with her fairly frequently.
All right.
I mean, it's kind of like praying. You talk, you never hear anything back.
Right.
But what you do get back from her is, "Dear friend, thank you for contacting me through a third party to share your opinions on issues important to you. I'm encouraged to hear from you, and please be assured I will keep your thoughts in mind. I understand that many who reach out to my office through a third party do not always want a response. Many are also unaware that third-party organizations are using their information to contact my office. Given the high volume of mail my office receives, I encourage you to contact me directly on my website. If you'd like a response on this particular issue, I appreciate hearing from you. I will continue to advocate tirelessly for West Virginia coal companies." No, I added the coal companies part. and our country's hydrocarbon industries. I added the hydrocarbon industries part. "By focusing on diversifying our economy, as long as it ain't got nothing to do with no wind or fucking solar." I added that part too. "Creating jobs in the fossil fuel industry." I added that part too. "Developing infrastructure for the fossil fuel industry. Strengthening the border." Okay, they ain't not nothing about fossil fuels there, but they's brown, and we all hates them anyway. I added that
I wasn't
too.
Aware West Virginia was the border state.
It, right, yeah, exactly. That, the only borders we've got are with Kentucky, Virginia. we got, you know, the river used to keep the Ohioans out, but, we built bridges. Pennsylvania and Maryland. So, that's she's defending the border. Well, you know how it is that the McCoy.
Well, you got to keep the Hatfields out of the state, right?
No, the Hatfields. Now, goddamn it, Rick, the Hatfields are in the state. It's the fucking McCoys that are across. It. Yeah, by God, Carol Miller's got the border patrol down there in Bloody Mingo, walking up and down with the great grandpappy Civil War muskets, waiting for the McCoys to come across.
Oh jeez. Oh my God. So what was catty about her? Just the fact that don't contact me through third parties? Was that it?
At third parties.
Third parties. Yeah.
You know, as if you got, you know, let's say you got your vellum out and your quill pen and your ink that you mixed up from a little block of goo and you scratched it out like the goddamn Constitution. Oh, well, right. You know, she'd probably come to your house and see you if you did that.
She would. Oh, jeez. Oh,
how about that? So you don't, and you know what? You don't even get a God bless you from her or a Jesus loves you. You just get sincerely. You know what? It's a fucking form response. It's kind of, that sincerely is what I would call superfluous.
Yes, it is. Yes. Yeah. Everybody uses sincerely. That's why I often use the ending best.
I'm old school. I use what goes after best too. Regards.
Okay. Right. All right. That works too. Yeah. Best regards.
And I worked for a lawyer once who ended all of his letters. Final paragraph was best regards, and then he went over and had the secretary do a signature block that said "Very truly yours."
Oh. Okay. Well, there you go. Talking about superfluous. Jeez.
Now the one that always busted my ass and made me laugh is when you see these old plantation owners and shitheads from the traitorous pre-Civil War South, right. And they always sign things with YROBTSVNT, your obedient servant. No, bub, I don't think that would be you. I think that's the people whose labor you're stealing and you don't fucking pay.
Right. That's what made the South great. Or I don't know if you want to call it great. That's what built the South anyway.
Meanwhile, Steve's doing some brainstorming up in New York. And he says, how do we get Trump on board? Tell him to imagine how many golf courses could be built on 1 million acres. Well, the problem is they built an 18-hole golf course on a mountaintop removal site.
Mm-hmm.
And you know when you play golf, you any kind of a golfer, Rick?
I used to play a lot a long time ago.
Okay, so you know what local rules are.
More or less, yeah.
I mean,
know
there's
local
the
rules in the courts as well. Sure.
Well, in golf, there's local rules like you're playing down in Florida. They got a local rule that says all alligators are OB.
Yeah, right, out of bounds.
And if you hit a golf ball next to the alligator, you are not allowed to retrieve it, but you are, however, allowed to run screaming to the furthest golf course in the North Georgia mountains and tee off from there. That's an example of a local rule. Well, they got a local rule. It's called Twisted Gun, and it won't grow grass worth shit.
Oh, geez.
So they got a local rule there that says if the ball goes in to a great big crevasse in the earth that's opened up because the ground won't settle on one of these godforsaken sites, you are allowed to call in the Dalai Lama, who is allowed to stand at the edge of the crevasse and say, "Gunga Galunga." That's a Caddyshack reference there for anybody paying attention.
Okay, that works. That works. That must keep the Dalai Lama pretty busy if he always has to like visit that golf course, Bob.
Yeah, right.
He must maintain like residence there during the summer or something.
Big hitter, the Lama. Big hitter.
Oh, geez. Well.
So we're at the end, and I look at him, and the Lama's going to stiff me, and I say, "Hey, Lama, how about something for the effort?" And he says, "There will be no financial remuneration for you today, but on your deathbed you will retain perfect consciousness." So I've got that going for me, which is good.
That's
exactly what it was. But the funny thing is, you can't do Carl the assistant greenskeeper in Caddyshack anymore because you immediately find yourself sort of eliding over into doing Trump, because Trump sounds like Carl the assistant greenskeeper from fucking Caddyshack. Yeah, the great thing about this is you can, it's a hybrid of Kentucky bluegrass and Jamaican sensimilla, and the great thing is you can play 18 holes on it and then get stoned to the bejesus belt. I'm sorry. I apologize.
You'll have to play a clip of Carl sometime. Although that may bust you on the YouTube.
A video that Trump retweeted for the Trump 2020 campaign got busted because
he's obsessed with Batman. He's obsessed with Batman.
Yeah, it got busted because it used the Batman music. Apparently, that's the only way to make him stop doing that shit is to file a copyright claim.
Yeah, it was The Dark Knight Rises or something like that that he seems to be obsessed with.
Yeah, I think so.
He borrowed some language in his inauguration speech from, I guess, the Bale or whatever.
Bane.
Bane, yeah.
Oh, and by the way, I fucked up. Got a note from Lady B. God damn it, Bob. You and that lady's accent. I almost spit my wine out. So glad you're back, and I have the night off due to weather. Keep up the good work. Bless your precious heart. Yours in black Jesus' name, Lady B. Well, I'm glad it was just almost spit your wine out. I hate to see good wine go to waste.
You know, I think, as far as I can tell, Bob, we have not ruined either the Eastern or Central time zones dinner yet. But the mountain is always a possibility. Maybe the mountain and Pacific is still possible, right?
Mountain and Pacific are still on the board.
Yeah. Now, going back to this black Jesus thing, I think you were going to finish your story by showing how Jesus, as depicted in the arts, changed from, you know, he got lighter and lighter.
Yeah, and he does. He does.
Closer to modernity, basically.
Exactly.
Right?
The further Christianity goes into Europe, the whiter he gets.
Right. Yeah.
Until, a couple of hundred, about 300 years ago, he's just fucking Fabio.
Yeah, right.
You know, without the pigeon in the face, mind you.
Right, right.
You know, any day, anytime I'm having a bad day, I can go to YouTube and just type in Fabio pigeon in the face, and everything just gets better.
I'll have to look at that.
Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
There's a video. It was a promotion. They were shooting as a promotional video, and, you know, Fabio with the long, flowing golden locks and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was going to ride a roller coaster at some amusement park. And I guess they took the downhill side, and he took a pigeon in the face. The roller coaster pulls back into the station, and there's, like, you know, a couple of, I don't know, he's spitting feathers out, and his nose is all bloodied. The pigeon won.
Oh, my God. The pigeon survived?
I don't know. I don't know. I think the pigeon probably bit it. But you want to talk about disturbing. Every now and then, the universe keeps sending me messages that it wants me to be a vegetarian.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I was boogieing down I-81 south today. Beautiful day.
Yeah.
And, you know, on the downhill side, the speed limit's 70, but on the downhill side, you know, you can't ask a trucker to just sit there and ride his damn brakes.
That's true.
And so this truck blows by me in the left lane, and it reminded me of the opening lines of a great old ditty by C.W. McCall. You remember C.W. McCall? You remember Convoy?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's a 10-4 rubber duck.
Right, right, yeah.
By the light of the moon on the 5th of June in a Kenworth hauling logs, a cab over Pete with a reefer on and a Jimmy. That.
Oh, that's a great
song.
There's
another one called Wolf Creek Pass.
Okay.
And it begins. And this, you know, again, old DJ brain, this started playing in the MP3 player of my brain the minute this truck blows by, because this truck blows by, and it was just pitiful. It was fucking pitiful. I mean, could they at least have the decency to put these things inside walls on a truck, or I don't know, maybe they'd create a bunch of methane and explode, or just, you know, I don't. But it's cage after cage after cage of turkeys.
Oh, God.
And the things, and they're apparently scared, because as it blows past me, all these turkey feathers are blowing back at me.
And your windows are down, right?
No, the windows were up. You know, if I'm above 55 miles an hour, the windows are up. But, you know, I just happened to glance over there, and I saw the forlorn looks on these turkeys' faces.
Oh, my God.
And two things immediately happened. I heard the big guy, Arthur Carlson, in my head saying, "As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly." And then the MP3 player started up with, me and Earl was hauling chickens on the flatbed out of Wiggins, and we'd spent all night on the uphill side of 37 miles of hell called Wolf Creek Pass, which is up on the Great Divide. We was sitting there sucking toothpicks and drinking knee-highs and onion soup mix, and I said, "Earl, let's mail a card to Mother and send them chickens on down the other side. Let's give him a ride." Well, Earl put down his bottle and mashed his foot down on the throttle, and then a couple of boobs and 1,000 cubes of a 1948 Peterbilt screamed alive. We woke up the chickens. We roared up off in that shoulder, spraying pine cones, rocks, and boulders, and put 2,000 head of them Rhode Island Reds and a couple of burnout roosters on the line. We commenced trucking, and hens commenced clucking, and then Earl reached in his pants and pulled out the unused half of a dollar cigar and scratched his pants with a match and lit it up, took a puff, says, "My, ain't this pretty up here?" And I said, "Earl, this hill can spill us. You better slow down, or you're going to kill us. You make one mistake, and it's the pearly gates for them 35 crates of USDA-approved cluckers. You want to hit second?" Well, Earl grabbed on the shifter, and he stabbed her into fifth gear, and then the chromium-plated, fully illuminated, genuine accessory shift knob come right off in his hand. And I said, "You want to screw that thing back on, Earl?" Well, he was trying to thread it on there when the fire fell off his cigar and dropped on down, sort of rolled around and lit in the cuff of Earl's pants and burned a hole in his sock. Sort of set him right on fire. Well, he's trying to put out the fire, and I started looking out the window, counting phone poles going by at the rate of 4 to the 7th power, and I put 2 and 2 together and added 12 and carried 5 and come up to 22,000 telephone poles an hour. Well, I looked at Earl, his eyes was wide, and his lip was curled, and his leg was fried, and his hands was froze to the wheel like a tongue to a sled in the middle of a blizzard. And I said, "Earl, I'm not the time to complain, but the time's come for me to explain. If you don't apply some brakes real soon, they're going to pick us up with a stick and a spoon." Well, he reared back and cocked his leg, stepped down hard as he could on the brake pedal, pushed it clean to the floor, and it sort of stayed right there on the floor. So it was a lot like stepping on a plum. Well, from there on down, it wasn't real pretty. It was Hairpin County and Switchback City. One of them looked like a can full of worms. Another one looked like a malaria germ. And then right in the middle of the whole damn show, there's a real nice tunnel now, wouldn't you know? Sign said clearance to the 12-foot line. Them chickens are stacked to 13-9. And we shot that tunnel at 110 like gas through a funnel and eggs through a hen. Took that top row of chickens off, slicker than scum off a Louisiana swamp. And all that. And meanwhile, and the damn truck took the same exit on the I-64 I took, so I'm still driving along in this backdraft cloud of terrified turkey feathers.
Oh, no. Well, Bob, I think that is a sign.
I don't think I'm going to be doing any turkeys for a little while, Rick. Because I was expecting one of them to just take that Daffy Duck sign and stick it out the little cage. Help, mother! You know.
Oh, jeez. Oh my God, that is great, Bob. I don't know how you remember that so well. That song, it's like those are complicated lyrics. And he talked. I'm sure they're fast too, just like the speed you were talking, right?
Well, I just like to think of it as sort of a redneck rap.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is a redneck rap. Absolutely.
But there was a time when I memorized every song on those albums.
Wow! Wow!
Because I just loved them. I loved them.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that there was no such person as C.W. McCall.
Okay.
It's actually the same guy who created Mannheim Steamroller.
Really?
You know, all that classical sounding electronica with the Christmas and the synthesizers.
Yeah.
It's the same guy. And so apparently when they still tour, he'll do a segment of C.W. McCall, come back with his tux on, and do Mannheim Steamroller.
Oh, my God. That is wild. Wow. 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 Genius, you know?
And, you know,
Alan Parsons. I saw him recently.
Oh, I heard. That had to be awesome.
Oh, I was in the sixth row right in the center, man. Oh.
You know, all of that electronics, and some of it's so neat. I mean, a long, long time ago, when I was just a young kid discovering the evils of marijuana, I used to listen to the iRobot album.
Oh, I've got it right here.
With the lights out, my eyes closed, and my head between the speakers.
Oh, wow.
I mean, there was better stereo separation that way, because I had an 8-track tape deck where the speakers separated.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But on that iRobot album,
mm-hmm.
For all the
great
cool
album.
Stuff, there was a song there. I'm looking for it now. I'm trying to. You wouldn't happen to have the track list, would you?
iRobot. I wouldn't want to be like you. Some of the time, Breakdown. Don't let it show. The Voice. Nucleus. Day after day, the show must go on.
That's the one. That's the one.
Day after day.
The
yeah.
first time I ever heard Day After Day, the Show Must Go On,
yeah,
I about cried with the wistfulness of it.
Oh, it is. It is a very emotional song.
And
yeah.
I in a way, I recognized in that song,
mm-hmm.
it was like a portent of one's own future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it talks about looking forward and dreaming, and then the next thing you know, you're looking back at the dreams you didn't accomplish.
There you go. Yeah.
And I can hardly stand to listen to it anymore.
Because if I
thought it was wistful and heartbreaking then,
mm-hmm.
it's 10 times as much so now.
See, Bob, I'm the kind of guy who I remember things, but I don't have regrets somehow. Don't ask me how I can do that. I guess I'm good at compartmentalizing, you know?
There's that one line. Now I got to look up the lyric.
I bought a special edition version of iRobot, which I can tell you after you get to that lyric.
And time slipped away before you could build any castles in Spain. The chance had gone by.
Well, life is very fleeting. That's what that song is about.
Yeah.
You know, you better grab it while you can. You know?
Tempus fugit, tempus fugit, carpe diem.
You got it. You got it. And I got the I got a special edition of iRobot. It's called a Legacy Edition. It was produced in like 2013. And it has, like, the first disc is all the songs on the actual, you know, album, okay? And then the second CD is, like, all sorts of stuff. Like, there was a U.S. radio commercial for iRobot, like a minute long.
Oh, wow.
Really well done. And then there's a Boole's iRobot experiment, iRobot Hillary Western soprano vocal rehearsal. And then there's extracts from Alan Parsons Project audio guide, like where Alan is talking about the album, and then his, I guess his collaborator is talking about the album, and how the, you know, for example, the collaborator said, well, you know, I thought that the song I Wouldn't Want to Be Like You is from the viewpoint of a robot, glad that they're not a human, because I wouldn't want to be like you, human. Whereas from Alan's perspective, he had the human perspective, like, I'm glad I'm human.
I'm glad I'm not a robot. Right.
Right, right. Right, so it's got all sorts of special, it's got the Naked Robot, which is an early instrumental mix. It's got, you know, Don't Let It Show, Eric Wolfson demo. It's got the Breakdown by a choir. Just all sorts of, it's got like 14 tracks, the second CD, of various things, you know. Either early versions of some of the songs, or just like, you know, the thoughts of the, you know, folks who created it or whatever, you know. So it's very, very interesting. And he, you know, he's a wonderful performer. and he surrounds himself. He doesn't do a lot of the singing, as you may know. But the version of Time was just probably the best I've ever heard in terms of the vocals. Just tremendous.
Oh. And I love the Pyramid album, too.
Yeah, I think I've seen that. Yeah. Yeah, they had some vinyl. They had some vinyl for sale.
Because the title track to the Pyramid album is so funny, ironic, sarcastic, satirical.
Okay.
Because it came out back when one of the things was Pyramid Power, the latest pop fad.
Oh yes.
And
yeah,
so that
was what, the early 80s or something like that?
Yeah, they're about maybe late 70s, early 80s. And so there's a pyramid under bed. There's a pyramid in my head. There's one underneath my bed. And my mate is getting cranky.
Oh, geez.
There's every possible location has a pyramidic station. And anyway, but yeah, it's funny.
Yeah. That is funny. That is funny. Yeah, I mean, he's just a rare talent. I miss.
Where'd you go, Rick? Now there's the Goddess of Irony for you.
Oh, that's weird. You
yeah,
there?
You said.
Okay.
You said I miss, and then you disappeared.
Oh, that's weird. Oh yeah, last time he was in town, I missed him, and so I wanted to make sure that I caught him this time around, and you know, the strange thing about his tour, I got a T-shirt, and his tour closes in Germany with, like, six shows in Germany. It starts out in Beverly Hills with the show I went to. And then he goes to, like, Canada and goes to – actually, he's got about four shows in Australia. So for the folks who listen to the show Down Under, you should definitely check him out. I think he's going to Melbourne and some other towns, cities that I'm not as familiar with, maybe Sydney, and then a couple of other lesser-known cities, at least lesser-known to me, living in the Northern Hemisphere. But, it's got a real international flavor. He's even going to Moscow. You know, he's got some shows in, I think, Amsterdam, another show somewhere else in the Netherlands, maybe a show in Belgium. Not very many in the U.S. Maybe a few shows in the U.S. is all, so... you know, he's got a real international following, I mean, as he should, you know.
Yep.
But, the sixth row, just couldn't beat it, man. It was just beautiful.
Nice, nice.
Star was very happy with the seat. She can be kind of fussy about the seats, and she was no complaints there.
Oh, wow. So you have to be careful about the seating now.
Yes, yes. I either
first
go to
10
a
rows or let's don't go.
There you go. Exactly. Maybe not quite that extreme.
Yeah, Darlene in Connecticut says, Billable is amazing with his music. He's got it all right at his fingertips, LOL. Yeah.
I do. I do, because I don't have a CD player in my car, and so I have it at the office.
Well, you know, I stopped at a truck stop earlier today because, you know, I hate corporate fast food. So there was a non-corporate place that promised best dang barbecue in Virginia. Now, you cannot throw a gauntlet like that down in front of me, Bob Kincaid, and not expect me to check in on it. But the best part of it was that they had good barbecue.
Okay.
And they had homemade fried pies.
Ooh.
Yes. But as you went back toward the restrooms, and by the way, it was a truck stop, so if you made a 40-gallon fuel purchase, you could have a shower for free. Otherwise, it was $9.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
If I'm ever there.
Economics.
But
right there in the little space between where you turned left to the ladies' room and right to the men's, there was a display there that said, free Bible sermons on CD. For while you go down the road. And I was proud of myself. I thought, well, this is prayer meeting Wednesday. This could be good. I didn't pick one up. Because I realized there was probably a lost soul out there that needed that CD far more than me.
There you go.
You
or you're afraid of going to hell if you grab it when you
No, no, I leave. Just I didn't I and then I stopped and then I stopped at a different place because as I've mentioned on a number of occasions, there are no Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen fried chicken joints in this state.
Right.
So everybody here loves Popeye's.
Yeah.
So I stopped and got some Popeye's to take home. And lo and behold, there's another guy, and it comes from Trucker Ministries of Gulfport, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And I got handed a tract called How to Make Sure You Will Go to Heaven. And I saw the Trucker Ministries logo on there, and I thought, fall asleep at the wheel. No.
Okay.
And it was a bunch of bilious Bible bullshit. But wow. Yeah.
Wow. Well, it sounds like an interesting trip back as, you know, almost as interesting as being in D.C. Did you check out that chicken place that I think, was
it? No, it wasn't the chicken place. It was Scott. We never got that far down Pennsylvania Avenue to go to Ollie's Trolley. It's definitely on the list. There were a couple of places that didn't get met. We did most of our eating in the Longworth cafeteria.
Okay.
Which is still recovering from having been in the tender clutches of the Republican Party.
Oh yeah, the whole Freedom Fries thing, that disaster.
Well, I mean that's long since gone, but it's not. It used to be really really good. Now it's not so good.
Hmm.
But I did have I had a ramen bowl that was reasonably tasty. Once I doctored the living daylights out of it.
Right.
What else? At one day, they had baked macaroni and cheese, and I swooped in on that with a will, and it is very good. I think they must have kept the guy on who did, or the woman on who did the macaroni and cheese, because it was fan-fucking-tastic.
Mm.
Bo was very pleased with a cucumber salad that he found. Yesterday I had a piece of decidedly ordinary utility pizza. But that's where most of our dining experiences took place.
Okay, well, next time maybe it'll be a different situation or not. I mean, who knows?
Well, at least Nancy's returned the practice of recycling, of doing the recycling separation and, you know, biodegradable to-go boxes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the Republicans don't like that. They just like to consume as many resources.
Oh, yeah.
It's called, you know, God gave the planet to us to
destroy.
To basically rape and destroy. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
So why not do it? Yeah. Yeah.
All right,
Bob.
It's been a dandy conversation. You have yourself a good evening, Rick. And
you too. I'm glad that the trip went well. And
we're only two more days from Friday on the front porch. So, you know.
Oh,
winter.
My God. Can you believe it? Well, wish me luck in nine ball.
Absolutely.
My buddy Joe from Ohio is in town. He's going to meet me at the dive bar.
Oh, hey to Joe. Hey,
yeah,
are you coming to Malloy Fest too?
I don't think so this time around, Bob. Yeah.
Okay.
But, it'll be a hoot, though, for, you know, I recommend anybody, you know, who can go to go, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
well, have yourself a
all
good
right,
evening.
Well, you take care. Someone's calling from Scottsdale, so I'll talk to you later, Bob.
All right, later, man. Bye.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
The one and only Billable Rick. Note coming in from Lady B. Loving you guys talking about music tonight. What do you think of the Moody Blues? Yeah, I know they're a bit corny, but I love them and have had the pleasure of seeing them several times. The best time was at Red Rocks with the Colorado Symphony. Yes, that concert, and it was amazing. Oh, I love the Moody Blues. I don't think they're corny at all. Breathe deep, the gathering gloom. Watch lights fade from every room. That's deep, man, especially when you're first discovering marijuana. Just saying. And I got two challenges to put on the table in the remaining hour of the program. One is the When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge, courtesy of Randy and PA. Randy will match the first $100 that comes in. And I kind of like the title of that, When Billionaires Choose, You Lose. It's kind of like what happened in the news media coverage of the hearing yesterday. The millionaires chose, and, well, dead hillbillies went begging. So, thank you, Randy, in PA. Thank you very, very kindly. When Billionaires Choose, You Lose, $100 challenge on the table. Let's see if we can knock it out, because... Also, courtesy of Ralph's up in freezing Wisconsin, it's no longer Fitzwalker Stand because, God be praised, Walker's gone, but the Wisconsin Supreme Court got fucked up again in an election. But if somebody will kick in $25, Ralph's will kick in another $25 on top. So that's awesome. That's a chance to make things to get back into the normal order of things without getting in a it'll keep us out of a hole for tomorrow. So when billionaires choose, you lose challenges on the table, courtesy of Randy and the we'll call it the snow go away challenge, courtesy of Ralph's up in the greater Milwaukee area. Thank you both. Thank you both very kindly. And speak of the devil, I guess Billable Rick conjured him. There's Scott. Hey, Scott.
Bonjour, Monsieur Thibault. Anyway, that's my...
Comment allez-vous?
Now you've gone beyond me. I remember... This is the character in my
high school French
book and record package. Jesus, I was just not prepared for foreign languages. I wasn't in high school. I wasn't prepared for anything, or the future or nothing. I was just a total waste of space. They should have given my spot to some deserving kid from elsewhere. Because I was just not in a frame of mind to further my education one iota more. You and Rick were talking a little bit about regrets in music lyrics, conjuring up notions of regret. I don't have a lot of regrets, but one that I do have is I wish I had applied myself. That was You know how at the end of the year, the teacher will write promoted to whatever the grade is and will write a little comment for your parents to read? Mine was he would do so much better if he would just apply himself or buckle down. That was another one. Jeez. But I guess I did okay. I haven't missed any meals, I don't think. So.
No, I think that, and sorry about Ollie's trolley, man. We really wanted to go.
That's all right. Hopefully it'll still be there. But I was curious to find out if you were able to make it and how you found the burger. Well, it was in the wrapper, Scott. Anyway, I don't know. A couple of things. I'm glad you're back, and I'm glad you made some good progress. And take it from me. I'm not much on writing to my representative in Congress. But when I do, I do. And I did for the AIC Act. And what I did, and Bob raised a good point earlier, don't just hit and split and give them a chance to forget you were in touch about the issue. Write about it, because I wrote to have Susan Davis meet up with Bob and his assistant, his partner there,
yeah,
to talk about the AIC Act. This was before Bob left. And then while he was there, I dropped her a line to let her know that the issue was still on my mind and hoped that she would become a co-sponsor of the bill and also support it with her vote, should it come up for a vote, and mentioned that Bob, what is your partner's name?
Bo.
Bo. Bob and Bo dropped off an informational flyer, and to take a look at that, and along with contact information, to do a telephone meeting, a brief telephone meeting, and reminded her that she's been very good about environmental and energy issues for California and America, and that this is legislation that is worthy of her support. So now I'll follow up in another week or so to find out how the telephone meeting went with the AIC Act people. You know, you got to stay on them. They're like 2-year-olds. If they're quiet, you
and
know,
and I'll tell you a little trick, and okay, it may or may not work, but you know, when you dial in, because you did that.
Oh yeah, I haven't had a dial phone since Ford was president, or Nixon maybe.
Well, when you phone in, the phone is answered by the reception people out in the front of the office.
Yeah.
And that's who's saying, yes, I'll be happy to pass it along.
Because that's what they're programmed to say, basically. Yeah.
And these are young people, and they're lovely people. And yeah, if you sit in an office, especially with somebody who's high profile, on our side, you really feel sorry for them because, you know, the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Scott, is a, you know, it's the propaganda arm of the Republican Party. So they'll, you know, and we mostly don't spend any time watching it. But what you'll see is that they sick the attack dogs on these members of the House and senators. And so, you know, we're talking about people 21, 22 years old. They're making shit for pay.
Yeah.
But that's where you start. That's the for all intents and purposes, that's the mail room, as it were. And you'll see him answer, and he's going, and they'll say, yes, sir. And, you know, it's somebody who's either just seen something or on Fox or has become hopelessly worked up by Washington Journal, okay?
Yeah.
And, sir, I'll be happy to, yes, sir, this office doesn't represent, this isn't your district, sir.
Yeah.
No, sir. Thank you for calling.
Yeah.
Because it's Emery there on the other line saying, I just want you to know I'm sick and tired of goddamn communists like that fucking fill in the blank there. God damn it. Ain't anybody interested in making America great again?
God, Amory,
it's time for your medication.
Woman!
And all you see is one side of that, and this poor soul. Sir, yes, I'll be happy, because they must be nice. But anyway, I was going to... So what you do is you say, I would like to speak to the Congresswoman's L.A. for the for environmental issues.
Legislative assistant?
Yes.
Ooh.
And if nothing else, you get the voicemail, so that then you're jumping one hoop, you're jumping one link in the chain, and you're leaving the message directly.
Yeah, because that's someone who is in communication with the representative on an ongoing basis, daily. Am I pretty much on? Spot on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's there's an aid for environment. There's an aid for health. There's an it, right.
That's a nifty idea. You've done this before, haven't you?
Oddly enough, I have.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I felt good, doing what I've done so far, and I'm not going to let up, because we shouldn't. We shouldn't. The health of people and a million acres of green done away with, to further strew the atmosphere and the environment and enrich coal barons.
Well, yeah, and I got one question from one member of the California delegation. Why are we talking? It wasn't being a dick. It's just, what's the nexus here?
What does this have to do with my...
I said, well, one, members of your delegation are strongly behind this bill, and dropped a couple of names, and they went, oh...
Ooh.
And then secondly, the coal that comes out of the mountains that get blown up in Appalachia gets on a boat and goes to China, and the last I checked, the winds on this planet blow west to east, and it lands on you.
Yeah, because, it's relevant. Anything that we can do to preserve life on the planet and to reduce or eliminate global warming and the inevitable, seemingly, climate change, that's everybody's business, from coast to coast, from sea to shining sea,
Yeah.
Well, I don't need to tell you. You know this. But, see, that's the deal. I mentioned this in a call a week or two ago. Voting every 2 years or 4 years, there's more to the process of being a good American than just showing up to vote. And God knows that's important. If we didn't find anything else out in 2016 and in 2018, we found that showing up to cast an intelligent vote every time you have the chance is critically important. But if you think that that's all your civic duty demands of you, then you need to read up on the topic. It's right there in the founding document. It is our right.
Well,
to redress.
And that's the way, especially with the House, that's the way it's supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
In the original vision of what this system was. Oh, by the way, I have to send a big thank you out to Lady B, who just got started on the challenges, and so we're $10 down the road. Thank you, Lady B. And she said, she said, I just kicked in a donation for just for saying you like the Moody Blues. Well, I do. I do. And that one that came out, what was the Long Distance Voyager? Long Distance Journeyer? Came out maybe about 1979. I had it on vinyl. Oddly enough, there was a lot of blue in the cover art.
Mm.
I loved that album. I played the grooves off of that one.
Now, didn't they do...
And Malloy. Malloy is a big Moody Blues fan.
Who did Knights in White Satin? Was that the Moody Blues? Or was that another group?
No, that was the Moody Blues. I always get it confused with Lucky Man, which is Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
Well,
because for some reason or another, they seem to touch a similar nerve.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I have very strange taste when it comes to music. I wish if there were a way to print out the playlist on my Amazon Prime Music Unlimited playlist, you would be astonished at some of the tunes on my playlist. But back in the 80s, when I did most of my radio work, it was at mostly at a couple of adult contemporary stations in Kansas City. And basically, you played what was on the playlist. That was what you were supposed to do. But I always held Knights in White Satin in reserve, because that was the song... It was the ultimate bathroom song. If you had to make an extended visit to the restroom, it was like an seven and a half, 8 minute song. So that was good. But it was also good if you had run out of cigarettes. You could put that cart in the machine, hit the button, out the door, lock the door, into the car, two blocks over to the quick stop, buy your smokes, back in the car, and then back to the station. You know, and the guy would turn on the radio to our station if it wasn't already on in the convenience store, so I could judge how much time I had left to get back to the tune, because I knew the song, at least the verses and the chorus and stuff. And I think that's illegal. You're not supposed to leave a station unpersoned. Been at one time.
No.
So FCC, if you're listening, come get my license. I dare you. You'll take this FCC.
Well, I could invite him to come get mine, but I think it's still pinned to a radio station wall somewhere, my class 3.
No, I always remember to take mine with me. And I've got my original one, which expired after like 5 years or something. And then they would send you a new one. And I don't know what became of the new one. But anyway, the long story short is, if you haven't written your congressional representative about H.R. 2050, is it?
Yes, it is.
The ACHE Act, A-C-H-E. Drop them an email. It's very simple to do. It takes about 5 minutes. Just kind of compose the thoughts in your head. And be brief. Tell them that, you're contacting them to invite them to or urge them or recommend to them to support H.R. 2050 and to co-sponsor H.R. 2050 and vote for it when it comes time to vote. And sincerely butter them up a little bit. Let them know that you appreciate their work that they do, and that you know that they're, even if they're not, that you know that they're interested in energy and environment issues, and that you rely on their presence in Washington to do the right thing, to not be beholden to the millionaires and billionaires and special interests, that you are their prime special interest. And I don't even know if representatives read their emails. That, again, probably goes to a peon. And I don't mean to diminish the work of the support team of our representatives, but let's face it. You think the phone calls are going to be a challenge for these poor people. I imagine the mail is scary.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Well, as of the anthrax scare, no mail goes straight into the House.
No, or the White House either, for that matter.
Yeah.
But when you really put a little thought to it, I know that the House and the Senate and the government gets a bad rap from some corners, but these are people who are idealists, you would think, and there are people who believe in that next level up of public service. And I'm not talking necessarily about the senator or the congressperson. I'm talking about the people that the senator or the congressperson hires to operate their office. Because it is a workspace. But the work that they're doing or should be doing, you know how quality is job one, used to be the motto of the Ford Motor Company. Well, constituent service should be job one for any senator or congressperson. And if it's not, you need to take a look at your senator or representative. If they don't have constituent service as their top priority, then you've got the wrong person in that seat.
Well, and for someone far, far away from Appalachia, one of the things we make mention of, especially with somebody like, you know, your member, is that it's an elegant little bill, because it really is, that combines at one and the same time environmental justice and climate change.
Yeah.
Because, see, there's no climate change bill out there, Scott, to reduce the effects of burning oil or even fracking. There is one bill out there that would stop one form of mining and keep millions and millions of tons of coal in the ground and preserve carbon sink forest that is actually quite good at doing what it does.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the other part of the equation. In the process of digging up all the damn coal, they're killing off the trees who are our friends. Bob Ross, the artist with the curly hair, they used to be on PBS years ago before he passed on.
There's a crazy little squirrel behind the rock, and he's saying, silly people, silly people.
Yeah. Here's a happy little tree. Here's a happy little cloud. I think on Netflix or Amazon Prime, there's a documentary about him. And the next time you're stressed out or just want something fun to watch, take a look at that if it's still on there. It's either on Amazon Prime or Netflix, Bob Ross. God, couldn't the world use a little more Bob Ross these days? Jeez. But you were talking about firing up the old 8-track and firing up a big old doobie and listening to music. Do you know what I used to listen to?
What's that?
No, I'll tell you, Bob. I had headphones. My late night listening in an altered state was a combination of the Firesign Theater, PDQ Bach, which is like the classical version of Spike Jones. Anybody who is...
I know my PDQ Bach.
And my high school music teacher in the first 2 years of high school actually went to college with Peter Schickele, the man who invented the music of PDQ Bach. And he turned me on. Basically, it's a parody of classical music. It sticks a pin into the stuffiness and the pomposity of most classical music fans. And it has such things, the opera called The Seasonings, and The Unbegun Symphony. Well, first of all, PDQ Bach was like the 27th.
Oh, here, hold on. Stand by.
Hello there. I'm Professor Peter Schickele.
I'm Professor P. Schickele of the University of Southern North Dakota at Hoople.
This is Professor Schickele.
Yes, that's right. The Professor Peter Schickele.
A very apologetic and delinquent Peter Schickele.
So we're going to be featuring the music of PDQ Bach on the program tonight. We'll be doing a whole slew of pieces by the infamous mini-meister of Weinam Rhein.
The man only had two things on his mind.
One of them was music, and the other was...
Ooh!
Hey, you guys, send me a telegram when you grow up.
That's more like it.
So how's about a little music already?
Yeah, how about that?
That PDQ, Bach?
That would be the one, Bob.
Yes.
But anyway, the musical selections on his albums, and there were four or five of them over the years. The Seasonings was one which I like, and the Unbegun Symphony, because PDQ Bach, apparently in legend, was like the 27th child, probably illegitimate, of, was it Wolfgang Amadeus Bach or the other Bach, his son or father, or who? And anyway, but the Unbegun Symphony only had a third and fourth movement, because he was born too late to write the first two movements. So anyway, if you like classical music, you'll enjoy PDQ Bach, because it's very clever. Very clever stuff. And the other one that I would listen to, stoned, listening with headphones, was the great Tom Lehrer, who turned 91 yesterday. The Vatican Rag, Pollution, Smut, We'll All Go Together When We Go, So Long, Mom, I'm Off to Drop the Bomb. One of the most clever artists. I am so happy that I came across his music in the 60s, because it was just a bit of sanity in an otherwise maddening decade. And you talk about lyrics. A friend of mine from Cincinnati, she and I talk on the phone two or three times a year, and no phone conversation with Christine would be complete without both of us singing our various favorite Tom Lehrer songs. And I they were great without being stoned, but when you're a little bit ripped to the tits, they're even funnier. So, but maybe that accounts for my odd approach to life. Firesign Theater, PDQ Bach, and Tom Lehrer. I don't know. Or it could have been the pot. I don't know.
Well, I just I Bluetooth my phone with my music into the rental car. And it's just the damnedest that it's like somebody, knows what I'm in a mood for.
Yeah,
because the when on random, just stuff pops up that I go, well, that's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Isn't that eerie how that works?
I think it's probably deliberate, and it creeps me right the hell out. But the music's okay, and yeah. you can it's got a good beat, and you can dance to it or drive to it. By the way, Lady B, back to the Moody Blues, says, Long Distance Voyager is my absolute fucking favorite, and the reason why I like them so much, I played the voice so many times they could have hired me to sing it. And look closely at the upper left-hand corner of the album. That object is what Justin Hayward dedicated the album to. It just completed its mission last year. Okay, no more emails. Enjoy your evening, Bob. Thank you, Lady B. You don't have to no more emails, but yeah, Voyager. V'ger.
Yeah.
V'ger.
Yeah. I don't know why people didn't like the first Star Trek movie.
Well, because a fan directed, I guess, and it was those interminable shots of the Enterprise going, and 5 minutes later we cut back to another shot of the Enterprise that's a little further across the screen now going, because I guess we're on impulse power. I don't know.
I was so happy to see the team get back together. I don't care what they put up on the screen. I would have enjoyed
it. I am V'ger.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, I found out later as a matter of trivia that storyline was supposed to sort of kick off a new Star Trek or something.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, and it didn't work out, but they picked it because, Gene Roddenberry was still involved then, and they picked it back up when they created The Next Generation.
I wonder if that was part of that documentary that I recommended that's on Amazon Prime, William Shatner, Havoc on the Bridge, Trouble on the Bridge, It's a story. It's a documentary about the story behind the creation of Star Trek Next Generation. I wonder if they covered that, or did the movie come later?
Well, I'm not sure, but I did get a message a minute ago. Where'd it go?
I don't know, Bob.
Well, that's because I have too many windows open. No, I got a message from Kelly a little bit ago. And since we're talking space stuff, a really cool thing has happened. By taking a whole bunch of telescopes here on this little planet and pointing them all at the same spot, they've taken a picture of a black hole.
Isn't that amazing?
Or at least the event horizon of one. And it's
doesn't that just blow your mind?
Well, yeah, it does. And Agnes and I were talking about it on the phone as I was on my way home. Because, well, I miss her so much that when I'm driving, you know, if I can't have her in the car, I can at least, you know, we can pretend on the phone.
Now, do you take the phone to the back seat and steam up the windows?
Yeah, now quit that. not while I'm driving. What would the turkeys think?
Oh God! That
you know, I don't want to test my theory for how to make sure you're going to heaven from Trucker Ministries. What's that, dear? Oh, Agnes says gobble gobble. So anyway, we were talking about this, and so there's another black hole that they're interested in.
Is this the space between Trump's ears?
But no, it's even further away, but it's emitting a massive jet of matter into this universe. Now, originally, the understanding on black holes was that it was basically the Roach Motel of the universe.
Yeah.
Matter goes in, but it doesn't come out.
Yeah, yeah.
So apparently,
that's a good analogy.
So apparently this is the back end of a black hole in another universe. And it's shitting into ours. Which makes me wonder if we're just kind of living in sort of, you know, a real low rent universe here, Scott. It's all, maybe we're, hey, maybe this whole universe is Appalachia. Yeah, how do you feel about being the universal hillbilly now, huh?
There's a song type.
Yeah, there's another universe where they're just making fun of everybody. The whole universe. And they're just, oh, would you look at them? Bumpuses. But Neil deGrasse Tyson had a perfect take on it. And Kelly sent me the tweet. Scientists, we've produced the first ever image of a supermassive black hole 55 million light years away. Response, ooh. Scientists, we've concluded that humans are catastrophically warming Earth. Response, that conflicts with what I want to be true, so it must be false.
There you go.
We pick and choose our science because of the poverty of scientific instruction, education in this country. We pick and choose our science like we're looking for a good ripe tomato.
Well, you know, it as you're telling the story of the dynamics of the black hole, okay, it occurs to me, Bob, that conservatives and or religious folk, and I don't mean to be redundant, but conservatives and religious folk at 11 o'clock Sunday morning, sitting in their little pew in their predominantly white, exclusively white suburban church, think that the axis of the known fucking universe runs directly through their own navel, and they've got a person-to-person direct link up with God himself, thinking, how wonderful am I, how wonderful am I, you know, that they're not into the amazing grace dynamic of the human being, you know, that saved a wretch like me, or I think the original was saved a worm like me, okay? I once was lost, but now I'm found, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so they're pretty full of themselves, in addition to a lot of other things they're full of, thinking of just how wonderful, high, and mighty, and righteous they are, when come to find out, to hear you tell it in terms of this black hole and its dynamics, we are basically the God's own celestial cesspool. We're on the business end of a damn shitting black hole. That should put it in perspective, friends. You know? Maybe this is our karma from zillions of light years and lifetimes ago, that I'm sure that there are stories in mythology, certainly there are in Scientology, where things were really fucked up to a fare-thee well, and stuff got destroyed big time, and maybe this is the outcome. But again, not just the outcome from previous mistakes, but the future, the ominous future that lie ahead. Get your head around that.
Oh, no
man,
kidding.
This is really great dope.
Yeah. Here. I love the response. Somebody jumped right in and said, "Scientists, we've created this incredible vaccine to help rid humanity of life-threatening diseases." Response, "I'm not giving that to my child. Didn't you read that Facebook meme?"
Yeah.
But lo and behold, great. Immediately comes a response from some guy named Bob, who describes him of Houston, Texas, who describes himself as a pro-life, conservative, politics, culture, philosophy. Now, bear in mind, Neil deGrasse Tyson, scientist, "We've concluded that humans are catastrophically warming Earth." Response, "That conflicts with what I want to be true, so it must be false." So the goddess of irony chose Bob, a political conservative from Houston, Texas, to reply, "One has evidence, the other does not."
Oh, dear.
Good for you, Bob. Good for you.
Well, listen, I'm going to cut this short, but I did want to bring a TV viewing tip.
And a reminder, this comes in from Bill in Pennsylvania, Tuckistan. The first season of Bob Ross's The Joy of Painting is on Netflix.
Oh, good. Oh, good. I loved Bob Ross. He was such a calming influence. I may have to crank that up tonight. But last night on PBS was the first two one-hour segments of a program I've been waiting for since they started giving promos on it. Henry Louis Gates has a four-hour documentary called Reconstruction, America After the Civil War. And the first half of it premiered last night on most of your PBS stations. And if you missed it, you can watch it online. Just key in Reconstruction PBS and you can see the 2 1-hour segments. And the other 2 1-hour segments will be on this coming next Tuesday. And I thought it was quite well done. But I was at a loss, Bob. I don't know about your history in high school and grade school, but I remember the Civil War and Lincoln freed the slaves, and I think my learning in elementary, junior high, and high school in the state of Virginia, and this may be why, the Commonwealth of Virginia, about Reconstruction was basically it happened, it didn't work, carpetbaggers, and then on to the panic of 1873, and points beyond. That was pretty much my understanding of it. It was an idea that didn't work out because it didn't get support, come to find out. Or there were people actually trying to screw it up, come to find out.
But, well, I mean, they was treating us like we'd done lost a war or something.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And it gets worse. I mean, the first 2 hours were somewhat optimistic. But I kept thinking, what would have happened if what's going to happen in the second 2 hours, like Jim Crow and the Klan, hadn't come to pass? What if they set about?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a giant what if. And I don't know about your instruction, but what I was, nobody ever mentioned the fact that there was an insurgent terrorism campaign waged to defeat Reconstruction.
Well, they go into that big time in the first two hours. But it gets worse, I fear, in the second 2 hours. On Tuesday night, PBS, check local listings for time and channel. But I recorded it on my old DVR thing, and I'm going to rewatch the first 2 hours, because this is stuff, especially in today's world, that needs to be recalled. Or if not recalled, people need to be introduced to this matter, this subject matter, for perhaps the very first time. I would dare say in 50% of our nation, the minds of the people of our nation, half of them don't know this story. And probably a lot of those won't care about the story. They'll think it's just liberal shit on PBS. Turn the channel, Marveline, you know? But I thought about this. I sat here watching this last night, and I said, you know, what if we had set about to make Reconstruction work in what it was intended to do, but the South acted like, what war? I mean, even today they call it that unpleasantness of,
yes,
150 years ago.
Yeah, right. But the fact of the matter is, if we're to be completely candid about it, Scott, yeah, Reconstruction was probably doomed to fail because it didn't have enough teeth. Okay. The fact of the matter is, the people who ran that insurrection were not punished for it. And so what would have been right and just would have been to take all the plantation owners, run them off the land, send them away somewhere, let them go to Brazil. A lot of them did. One of my ancestors went to Egypt. No shit.
Really?
And then give the land to the people who had earned it by virtue of having had their lives and their labor stolen from them.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a bridge too far, because there was too much inherent racism even on the winning side.
Well, and see, that's one of the things that they get into in the first half.
Well, did they get into, has anybody mentioned Garfield yet?
No, we're not up to Garfield right now.
Because Garfield gets the Republican nomination because nobody wanted the two leading contenders at the, I think it was a convention in Chicago. And he gave a deeply inspiring speech, and he said his goal would be to fulfill the work of civil rights and equality and finish the job that Lincoln had envisioned. And
no,
then
they're not.
And
go
then
ahead.
That insane asshole shot him, didn't kill him.
Oh yeah.
But managed to put him in a position to be medical malpracticed on for months of agony. I mean, that poor man was in. I'm not trying to be gross or prurient.
No, I know.
They were shoving dinner up that poor man's rectum.
Yeah, wrecked him, damn near killed him.
Succeeded.
PBS did a documentary called "The Murder of the President," and it's on Netflix.
I've seen it. Yeah.
Or Amazon Prime. Well, watch it.
There was no doubt about who killed Lincoln, who killed McKinley. Nobody was surprised when Harding died. But the fact of the matter is, if there had even been a year's worth, maybe, of advancement in medical science, Garfield wouldn't have died. And the thing is, all those good things, all those high-minded things that Garfield talked about that got him the presidency died with him.
Yeah.
Because his vice president came in, and there was going to be no upset in the apple cart.
Well, two things. So far, Reconstruction, the documentary on PBS, where it left off was it covered Andrew Johnson, who was, oh, God, you think Trump's a joke. Andrew Johnson was a bigger joke and drunk. Okay, so
well, and Johnson was a sleeper cell. Lincoln ditched Hannibal Hamlin in hopes of Johnson serving as some sort of an ameliorative to the conquered South.
Yeah.
And it was probably the greatest mistake of his entire presidency. Because he wouldn't have had the problems Johnson did. Hannibal Hamlin wouldn't have. And who wouldn't have liked to have had a president named Hannibal Hamlin?
Yeah. And then U.S. Grant, okay, came in for his spot as president. And I would like to think, I mean, based on what they covered in the documentary, I would like to think his heart was in the right place, but he could also count. He would lick his finger and put it up to see which way the wind was blowing politically. And that a lot of that is helped to kill Reconstruction.
Sure.
The Northerners, who you got to remember, these were the people who were the abolitionists, many of them,
the Northern coalition that existed during the time of the Civil War was already fracturing by the time they got around to passing the 13th and 14th Amendments.
Yeah, and they really go into the divisions in the Republican Party that helped lead to Reconstruction not working. But see, another thing, there are layers and layers of this you talk about echoes from the past, not echoes, but projections from the past into our current time. You had just the mindfuck of there was a time in this country when the Republicans, by and large, were the liberal folk.
Yes.
Trying to do the right thing, and the Democrats were the obstructionists.
And that all begins to change with the rise of those post-Reconstruction Republicans, the big business Republicans. The progressive movement gets its impetus from the Republican Party of the late 19th and early 20th century. Organizations like the Knights of Labor, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Who just wanted to tear it all down and start all over again. I'll tell you a great place. This may seem odd, but so often it's true. A great place to get a picture, even though it's gut-bustingly funny, a picture of the operation of the government of the United States in the late 19th century is a short story by Twain called The Facts in the Great Beef Contract.
I'll check that out.
And it's about a guy trying to get paid on a contract for beef that he won to provide beef to the Union Army, which was never paid. And it's pure madness. And again, gut-bustingly funny. And I actually was thinking about it while I was in D.C. because I walk around trying to see the D.C. of the past. For instance, we did a lot of work in the Cannon House office building. Well, it's under a state of renovation. The two oldest office buildings are getting renovated right now, the Cannon House office building and the Russell Senate building. They also happen to be the most ornate and lovely of the three buildings on either side, because back then we built beautiful things. But it was built in the early 20th century on the site of what had previously been known as somebody's, I can't remember the name, Congressional Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those places where members of Congress slept three to the bed.
Yeah.
Early D.C. is a weird place.
You think?
Because it was utterly the land was unsuited for being a city of any size, but Washington had acquired it, and there was a lot of deal making done so that Washington could make a buck because he was so highly revered. And a lot of people don't know, you know, if you look at D.C. now, you know, it stops at the Potomac. Well, it was at one point in time a square that encompassed a part of Virginia as well.
Oh, yeah. There's a little, if you go down by the Masonic Temple in Alexandria, just south of D.C., and go down, you're on King Street, which is the main drag through Old Town, and go to Russell Road, maybe a block or so off of King Street. There's a fenced, a little square plot of land, maybe 4 feet or 2-3 feet on each side, if that, with a wrought iron fencing over it. And there's a stone, and that's the southern tip of that square that
exactly
is the boundary mark of the old district of
Columbia. And the Old Dominion backed out when they realized that people who lived in the district, the Virginia part of the district, would no longer be able to vote in Virginia, or vote at mm-hmm. all for that matter. And so they reclaimed it.
Yeah, and if they hadn't, I would have been born in the District of Columbia. Because I would have
spent the week in the District of Columbia.
Yeah, yeah. It's one more quick thing about the Reconstruction thing. So you've got, they give a background of the Civil War and the this issue of slavery, and then the defeat of the South, the rebels, the traitors, and then Lincoln's killed, and then Andrew Johnson assumes the presidency, and then U.S. Grant, Ulysses S. Grant, is the president, and they leave off with Rutherford B. Hayes and that story, yet another projection, a revisiting of a future event.
Because the Electoral College never seems to operate to the benefit of a Democrat.
There you go. And I'm telling you, there's
Hayes gets in,
yeah,
because of the deal that gets made. That they'll let him, Congress will let him be president.
Yeah, yeah.
If he'll just give up on this silly business of Reconstruction.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man. Say what you will about PBS. They do things right from time to time in terms of their documentary and service and their programming. I have learned more in the last 25 years from things I have seen on PBS. And this is stuff, especially the form of TV production. There was a time in this life in America when NBC, ABC, and CBS actually used to do one-hour documentaries a couple of times a month, you know?
You mean the ones that didn't involve the Kardashians?
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about documentaries, maybe not of the caliber that you see on PBS today, but I'm talking about a one-hour serious exploration of a topic.
At
of
least
national...
they were trying.
Yeah, yeah. And those days, and we have, you know, deregulation and advances in technology and corporate. When companies like General Electric and Westinghouse and Capital Cities took over NBC, CBS, and ABC, respectively, back in, I guess that was the 80s, one of the first things they did was to focus on the bottom line, and one of the first things they did to do that was to slash the budget for the news operations for the three networks.
Right, and to try to make them and make the news operations make money. I think one of the in the history of journalistic broadcasting in the United States, one of the seminal moments is when they took ABC put Rune Arledge, whose claim to fame was Wide World of Sports, in charge of the news division.
Yeah.
And suddenly, you know, by God, it's got to be exciting. We need a ski jumper falling off the jump every, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this sucker's got to make money, damn it.
And, you know, I may be one of, not just me as an individual, but people of my age group, my demographic, are more than likely the last or next to last generation who remember when stations were licensed in the public interest, need, and necessity.
Sure. I mean, I'm probably the last generation that remembers Charles Kuralt.
Yeah. And there was a time, friends, in this country when broadcasters took their mission seriously, and there wasn't all this crap that, I mean, if I see another promo for a fucking entertainment reality competition show where they're dancing to make somebody the you know, it's nothing more than a talent show. It's mindless. It's Fred Allen.
The president of the United States is president of the United States because of a so-called reality TV show and professional wrestling. End of story.
Yeah, chewing gum for the eyes, as Fred Allen once called it, is what television was.
Yep.
Well, anyway, I was going to go a half hour ago, but now it's time for all of us to go.
Yep, got to leave, Scott.
All right, Bob, take care. I'm glad you're back. I'm glad the work got done, and there's more yet to do. So write your representative if you haven't, folks. Let them know.
Support, HR 2050.
2050, the ACAC, A-C-H-E. I thought it was A-K-E. I don't know what was wrong with me.
Yeah, Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act.
Thank you. And thank you, Bob, sincerely, for your good efforts. For the people of your state and for the country and for the world. In the grand scheme of things, it may not seem like much, but I think you know in your heart of hearts how much it is. And all it takes is people who are informed and committed to make stuff happen.
Right. And look at it this way. If we can fix Appalachia, we can fix anywhere in this country.
Yeah, we can do it, people, but we gotta make it a priority, and not just election cycle to election cycle, but in each day, when you lay your head down to go to sleep, if you haven't done at least one little thing to improve the situation, it's like that old saying we had in the 60s, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So be part of the solution. You'll sleep better, if nothing else.
Hear, hear. Scott, have a good night, my friend.
All right, Bob. Take care.
Later.
See ya.
And so we come to the end of the program. Randy in PA said a little bit ago, you sound a little awful perky for somebody who's on the road. That's what getting back home and getting back into the studio does for me. You guys perk me up. And I'm eternally grateful for it. And again, thanks to Lady B for getting us started. We got $15 to go. Let's do this one piece at a time. Ralph's came in first, and then Randy's came in. So we got $15 to go on the Spring Will Get to Wisconsin Someday Challenge. $15 to go on that. And then there's $100 when Billionaires Choose You Lose Challenge, courtesy of Randy and PA. It will fall to the overnight crew to respond to those challenges. And if that happens, we will be in much better shape going into tomorrow night than we otherwise would be, bottom line. So hopefully, if you're listening now, maybe you'll finish Ralph's challenge. Somebody will finish Ralph's challenge, and then we can knock out Randy's challenge. So thank you very kindly to both Ralph's and Randy, and hopefully I can report back by tomorrow evening that the challenges were met and we just have an ordinary evening's funding to do. Okay? Thanks to all of you who listen to the program and share your precious finite time engaging in it. Thank you so very much to all of you who keep the program going. Thank you ever so much to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks for popping in earlier, Steve from Georgia Stan. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.